In the afternoon, the whole tribe gathered to the feast. Men, women, children, and dogs gorged to repletion. Nor was there one person, even among the chance visitors and stray hunters from other tribes, who failed to receive some token of the bridegroom's largesse. Litlit, tearfully shy and frightened, was bedecked by her bearded husband with a new calico dress, splendidly beaded moccasins, a gorgeous silk handkerchief over her raven hair, a purple scarf about her throat, brass earrings and finger rings, and a whole pint of pinchbeck jewellery, including a Waterbury watch. Snettishane could scarce contain himself at the spectacle, but watching his chance drew her aside from the feast. "Not this night, nor the next night," he began ponderously, "but in the nights to come, when I shall call like a raven by the river bank, it is for thee to rise up from thy big husband who is a fool, and come to me." "Nay, nay," he went on hastily, at sight of the dismay in her face at turning her back upon her wonderful new life. "For no sooner shall this happen than thy big husband, who is a fool, will come wailing to my lodge. Then it is for thee to wail likewise, claiming that this thing is not well, and that the other thing thou dost not like, and that to be the wife of the factor is more than thou didst bargain for. Only wilt thou be content with more blankets, and more tobacco, and more wealth of various sorts for thy poor old father Snettishane. Remember well, when I call in the night like a raven from the river bank." Litlit nodded, for to disobey her father was a peril she knew well, and furthermore, it was a little thing he asked. A short separation from the factor, who would know only greater gladness at having her back. She returned to the feast, and midnight being well at hand, the factor sought her out and led her away to the fort amid joking and outcry, in which the squaws were especially conspicuous. Litlit quickly found that married life with the head man of a fort was even better than she had dreamed. No longer did she have to fetch wood and water and wait hand and foot upon cantankerous menfolk. For the first time in her life, she could lie abed till breakfast was on the table. And what a bed! Clean and soft and comfortable as no bed she had ever known. And such food! Flour cooked into biscuits, hot cakes and bread, 3 times a day and every day, and all one wanted. Such prodigality was hardly believable. To add to her contentment, the factor was cunningly kind. He had buried one wife, and he knew how to drive with a slack rein that went firm only on occasion, and then went very firm. "Litlit is boss of this place," he announced significantly at the table the morning after the wedding. "What she says goes. Understand?" And MacLean and MacTavish understood. Also they knew that the factor had a heavy hand. But Litlit did not take advantage. Taking a leaf from the book of her husband, she at once assumed charge of his 2 growing sons, giving them added comforts and a measure of freedom like to that which he gave her. The 2 sons were loud in the praise of their new mother. MacLean and MacTavish lifted their voices, and the factor bragged of the joys of matrimony till the story of her good behaviour and her husband's satisfaction became the property of all the dwellers in the Sinrock district. Whereupon Snettishane, with visions of his incalculable interest keeping him awake of nights, thought it time to bestir himself. On the 10th night of her wedded life, Litlit was awakened by the croaking of a raven. and she knew that Snettishane was waiting for her by the riverbank. In her great happiness, she had forgotten her pact, and now it came back to her, with behind it all the childish terror of her father. For a time, she lay in fear and trembling, loath to go, afraid to stay. But in the end, the factor won the silent victory, and his kindness, plus his great muscles and square jaw, nerved her to disregard Snettishane's call. But in the morning, she arose very much afraid, and went about her duties in momentary fear of her father's coming. As the day wore along, however, she began to recover her spirits. John Fox, soundly berating MacLean and MacTavish for some petty dereliction of duty, helped her to pluck up courage. She tried not to let him go out of her sight, and when she followed him into the huge cache and saw him twirling and tossing great bales around as though they were feather pillows, she felt strengthened in her disobedience to her father. Also, it was her first visit to the warehouse, and Sin Rock was the chief distributing point to several chains of lesser posts. She was astounded at the endlessness of the wealth there stored away. This sight, and the picture in her mind's eye of the bare lodge of Snettishane, put all doubts at rest. Yet she capped her conviction by a brief word with one of her stepsons. "White Daddy good?" was what she asked, and the boy answered that his father was the best man he had ever known. That night, the raven croaked again. On the night following, the croaking was more persistent. It awoke the factor, who tossed restlessly for a while. Then he said aloud, "Damn that raven!" And Litlit laughed quietly under the blankets. In the morning, bright and early, Snettishane put in an ominous appearance and was set to breakfast in the kitchen with Walnidani. He refused squaw food, and a little later bearded his son-in-law in the store where the trading was done. Having learned, he said, that his daughter was such a jewel, he had come for more blankets, more tobacco, and more guns, especially more guns. He had certainly been cheated in her price, he held, and he had come for justice. But the factor had neither blankets nor justice to spare. Whereupon he was informed that Snettishane had seen the missionary at Three Forks, who had notified him that such marriages were not made in heaven, and that it was his father's duty to demand his daughter back. "I am good Christian man now," Snettishane concluded. "I want my Litlit to go to heaven." The factor's reply was short and to the point, for he directed his father-in-law to go to the heavenly antipodes, and by the scruff of the neck and the slack of the blanket propelled him on that trail as far as the door. But Snettishane sneaked around and in by the kitchen, cornering Litlit in the great living room of the fort. "Mayhap thou dost sleep over sound last night when I called by the river bank," he began, glowering darkly.
"Nay, I was awake and heard."
Her heart was beating as though it would choke her, but she went on steadily. "And the night before I was awake and heard, and yet again, the night before." And thereat, out of her great happiness, and out of the fear that it might be taken from her, she launched into an original and glowing address upon the status and rights of woman, the first new woman lecture delivered north of 53. But it fell on unheeding ears. Snettishane was still in the dark ages. As she paused for breath, he said threateningly, "Tonight I shall call again like the raven." At this moment, the factor entered the room and again helped Snettishane on his way to the heavenly antipodes. That night, the raven croaked more persistently than ever. Litlit, who was a light sleeper, heard and smiled. John Fox tossed restlessly. Then he awoke and tossed about with greater restlessness. He grumbled and snorted, swore under his breath and over his breath, and finally flung out of bed. He groped his way to the great living room, and from the rack took down a loaded shotgun, loaded with birdshot, left therein by the careless McTavish. The factor crept carefully out of the fort and down to the river. The croaking had ceased, but he stretched out in the long grass and waited. The air seemed a chilly balm, and the earth, after the heat of the day, now and again breathed soothingly against him. The factor, gathered into the rhythm of it all, dozed off, with his head upon his arm, and slept. 50 yards away, head resting on knees and with his back to John Fox, Snettishane likewise slept, gently conquered by the quietude of the night. An hour slipped by, and then he awoke, and without lifting his head, set the night vibrating with the hoarse gutturals of the raven call. The factor roused, not with the abrupt start of civilized man, but with the swift and comprehensive glide from sleep to waking of the savage. In the night light he made out a dark object in the midst of the grass and brought his gun to bear upon it. A second croak began to rise, and he pulled the trigger. The crickets ceased from their sing-song chant, the wild fowl from their squabbling, and the raven croak broke midmost and died away in gasping silence. John Fox ran to the spot and reached for the thing he had killed, but his fingers closed on a coarse mop of hair, and he turned Snettishane's face upward to the starlight. He knew how a shotgun scattered at 50 yards, and he knew that he had peppered Snettishane across the shoulders and in the small of the back. And Snettishane knew that he knew, but neither referred to it.
"What dost thou here?" the factor demanded. "It were time old bones should be in bed."
But Snettishane was stately in spite of the birdshot burning under his skin.
"Old bones will not sleep," he said solemnly. "I weep for my daughter Litlit, who liveth, and who yet is dead, and who goeth without doubt to the white man's hell. Weep henceforth on the far bank, beyond earshot of the fort," said John Fox, turning on his heel, "for the noise of thy weeping is exceeding great, and will not let one sleep of nights."
"My heart is sore," Snettishane answered, "and my days and nights be black with sorrow."
"As the raven is black," said John Fox.
"As the raven is black," Snettishane said.
Never again was the voice of the raven heard by the riverbank. Litlit grows matronly day by day and is very happy. Also, there are sisters to the sons of John Fox's first wife, who lies buried in a tree. Old Snettishane is no longer a visitor at the fort, and spends long hours raising a thin, aged voice against the filial ingratitude of children in general, and of his daughter Litlit in particular. His declining years are embittered by the knowledge that he was cheated, and even John Fox has withdrawn the assertion that the price for Litlit was too much by 10 blankets and a gun.